Hi, everybody. This is Mordechai Tzlatzker, your host, and thank you so much for joining shareenjoyment.com. So tonight's share is a recap of Parshas Korach, one of the more enigmatic parshios in the Torah. There are very few parshios that are named after individuals, and there's clearly something that we can glean from Korach about what to do, what not to do, and how to relate to one another in a community setting. So when we think about Korach, we have to ask ourselves the first question, which is, what was so terrible about what Korach had done and made him so unique when compared to other issues that we encounter in Sefer Bamidbar? So to begin, we know that Sefer Bamidbar says the Berditchever, the Kedushas Levi, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak from Berditchev, is Sefer Bamidaber, which is a Sefer all about what comes out of our mouth. And much of what this Sefer has to do and deal with are instances that happened, whether it was the Meraglim speaking poorly about the land of Israel, whether it was, you know, the people complaining with the Mun and the Slav not being satisfied, and then coming on to Korach. So I'd like to try to address the prior instances and see if we can shed some light on them, and then delve a little bit into Korach for the remainder of the few minutes that we have together. So the first is, Vayiyam Kimis Onan, the people that were complaining. So Rashi there tells us, Elu Eruvav, these are the peripherals. The Eruvav are the people that were not part of the Jewish nation, but when they saw Kriyas Yamsuf, when they saw the splitting of the sea, and when they saw Kabbalat HaTorah, and when they heard about all of the Makos, the plagues that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had stricken the Mitzrayim with, they became so interested and enticed, they wanted to join. But when things, you know, weren't going so well, they were also the first to complain, and they, you know, roused a lot of interest in a rebellion. So first we have to understand that, you know, these people had a prior existence in the sense that they were not always part of our family. However, now that they are, they were in it when it's good, but sometimes they're not in it when it's not so good. So Vayiyam HaKim Sonam, this is not speaking about all of Klal Yisrael. This is speaking about the peripheral side. The second is, when we think about the issue of the statement, Zachanas Odaga Shachanas Mitzrayim, and then they said, Mi Chalanu Basar, you know, which one of us has eaten any meat? And remember the fish that we had consumed when we were in Egypt. So what is that all speaking about? That actually it's interesting because our rabbis explained that when it came to fish does not require shchita. It does not require the service of actually, you know, the shchita, the melicha, the salting, all these other things. The only thing that we had to do actually afterwards was with the meat, when we had to actually, we were informed that there were laws of shchita. So we never had those laws before. So the fish that we had eaten in Mitzrayim is the same fish that we can enjoy today, no difference. However, when it comes to the mitzvos, now that we have Kabbalat HaTorah, and that includes the mitzvos involved in slaughtering an animal correctly, Mi Yachalena Basar, which one of us has eaten meat that actually went through this process? So they were encouraged and enticed. So this is not necessarily a knock on the Jewish people. It rather is a defense, because we know that when we do mitzvot and Matan Tovim, we make the world a whole lot sweeter. And one of the greatest mitzvot is actually Hachnasas Arachim. And Baruch Hashem, this past Shabbos, I had the chus of spending Shabbos by a beautiful family in Teaneck that opened their doors, not just to me, but to countless others before me, and hopefully not Hashem after me. And they should be blessed with Arichas Yomim Vashanim Tovim. So, but when we think about this particular instance, this was an opportunity for the Jewish people to enjoy something that they otherwise never tasted before. How does it, the time of the mitzvot, right, the taste of the mitzvot, is so sweet when you make a bracha and when you follow halacha and in accordance with Jewish law. So the next thing is that we have to now turn to the Meraglim. What was it about the Meraglim that made it so unique that 10 of the tribes, 10 of the 10 of these princes were unable to see the light, so to speak, and only two were able to, Yeshua and Kalev? The answer is because Chazal say that if they were concerned that if they were to enter into Eretz Yisrael, they now were required to physically take care of the land and sow and reap and harvest. And up until this point, even though they did complain about the MUN, they still were very happy with it. There are people that complain about a lot of things, but they're still very happy that they have them. And so if we were to send in women, for example, Kuryaka brings down, they would have came out with a positive report because they were comfortable with the idea of working. But this idea for men was completely foreign because that would require them to give up all of the bounty that they had received up until this time through Akash Baruch Hu by means of a miracle, and they were able to enjoy all of this MUN, and now they would have to actually reap and sow and plow and harvest and plant and recycle and do it all over again. So the Jewish people at that time, the princes, were not yet ready to have this level of commitment. But there clearly was a wrongdoing here because they should have said something positive. So when we do something negative, HaKadosh Baruch Hu then gives us an opportunity to turn it into a positive. And what is that? We take 10 people and we make a minion. And that's how we make a tikkun. We rectify an improper use of 10 and we correct it with a proper use of 10. And we have other instances of when we do this. For example, we say that we make a bracha on Friday night over grape juice. Why particularly grape juice, and why is grape juice the most profound of all of the brachos? It's the most chashuv, the most, you know, the highest level bracha after hamotzi. And the answer is something even in place of hamotzi, if you learn different mafarshim and gemara brachas. But the idea is that the eitz hadas could have been an esrog, or, right, so we take an esrog, which is one of the avraminim, which is most chashuv. Everyone's looking for an esrog. They're not looking for a lulav. They're looking for the esrog. That's the most chashuv. And we make a beautiful bracha, Amatikas Lulav. We fuse all of these Aramim together, right? And they represent Tam V'Reach, Tam V'Ein Reach, Reach V'Ein Tam, right? There are four different types of Jewish people, right? And I refer to those that have Torah mitzvos, those that have Torah and no mitzvos, those that have mitzvos and no Torah, and those that don't have any Torah and any mitzvos. And what do we say? We're bringing everyone together, Yachad, in one arm, in one hand, one collective species, because we know that all of us benefit from one another's strengths and kohos. And that's the beauty of Sukkot, is when we don't look at the past, we only look at the future. And that's why it's Zman Simchaseinu, among other reasons. But here, in the instance of the Meraglim, you know, this is clearly an indication that the Jewish people had so much more to learn about themselves, and they were just not yet ready. Now we turn to Korach. I know that I'm itching on time. So Korach was, Vayikach Korach, he took, and what did he take? So we know that there were many people that had different level arguments. He said, anybody that has an argument, let them come forward, and then they will join together with me in a form of, a rebellion of sorts, which was really meant to challenge the Masoros HaTorah that Moshe Rabbeinu was given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be the transmitter of the Torah. And the irony about all this is that Korach was, according to the Torah, the wealthiest Jew that ever lived. Only Haman was wealthy on the other side of the coin for the nations of the world. And despite the fact that Korach had all of this wealth, he refused to stay in place. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave over this level of responsibilities to Moshe, to Aaron, to the Nesi'im, and to Korach, and to the rest of the family, Korach was upset that he had this particular responsibility of Nosei Kehilim, Nosei Aaron, and this is something that he wanted more. And he felt that Moshe Rabbeinu should be giving him more. And he felt that Moshe took away something from him. And he perhaps may have thought that arguing and fighting would be a means of drawing himself closer. But this is not the path to success. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, Vayakum l'fnei Moshe. And so Rabbeinu Bachya brings down that these are people that, in a mystical sense, they preceded the time of Moshe, and they go back to the time of the Tower of Babylon, right? So then in that particular instance, we find that there was a narrative of where all the people joined together, and they rebelled against God, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, allowed them to spread them out among the nations of the world, and that's why everyone has a different language. There's 70 languages. Actually, today there might be a few more, but the idea is that these people existed before time. That's why the pasuk says "Lifnei Moshe," before Moshe, "Anshi Shem." They came from the house of Shem, which is also a reference to Shem ben Noach. And this goes back to the prior generation. And Moshe Rabbeinu did not daven for these people. Moshe Rabbeinu davened for everybody. And here we have the big question: why did Moshe Rabbeinu daven for them? And the answer is because they were given a chance, and they absconded that tremendous responsibility to correct themselves after the Doha Flooda. And so that's the reason why they all perished. And it's ironic because Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was ratted out by Dathan and Aviram, and he had every reason to gripe, but yet Moshe Rabbeinu goes with Aaron and they try to placate the people, and they don't want to be placated. I wanted to actually, the point of tonight's Shia was to speak about the wisdom of the wives in this particular instance. And we see that Korach's wife enticed him to do something wrong by saying, what is the purpose of all of these laws that Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us? Right? If we have a beged, shekul tchilas tzrich and tzitzis, if we have a bias that's moi sfarim, does it need a mezuzah? You know, so all of these were challenges. And Korach said, you know, maybe you're right. But then you have the other side of the coin where you have the wife of On ben Pelas, and she says something totally different. And to her, Chazal attributed Chachmas Nashim Bansa Besa, that the wisdom of women are the means by which the house is built. And what did she say? She said, what difference does it make if Moshe is the leader or Korach is the leader? At the end of the day, you, Own, my husband from the tribe of Reuven, will never be the leader. So why do you have to get involved in a debate that's not yours? And so I would love for you to stay out of this discussion, stay out of this debate, and stay out of this fight. And the best way for you to do this is sit down. She served him some wine. She served him, you know, a beautiful meal. And he was so exhausted and tired. And then the following morning, when all the people came around looking for Own ben Pelas, he was asleep. And his wife came outside, and she uncovered her hair. And then we find that the people were uncomfortable looking at her hair being uncovered, and so they kept on moving. But they kept on moving in the sense that they were uncomfortable in one respect and not uncomfortable with rebelling against Moshe. So it's hard to understand the motivations behind people. The final thought about the parsha is something really beautiful that I like to try to, for a moment or two, to just draw out. And that is, we know that Aaron's staff, his wooden staff, turned into almonds. And Rabbi Abachia brings down that almonds, when we taste almonds at the onset, it tastes quite bitter. It doesn't really, but at the end of the digestion of the almond, it is quite sweet. And this is a reference to Machlokas and Lashon Hara in general. So in summation, if we had to learn something from this parsha, we have to learn from this particular instance about this unique almond. And so when someone wants something, you know, they want to know the juicy material, so they're always interested in hearing the Lashon Hara. So if you have the Lashon Hara, it's very, very sweet up front because it's juicy, it's interesting, but at the end it's very bitter because people are fighting with one another. The harder of the two is to create shalom, to create peace between two people that are not really speaking to one another. And so what do we do when people want to create peace? They open up the lines of communication, and they keep the line of communication open even when it should otherwise, you feel that it could easily be shut. But you keep the line open, and you placate, and you say, you know what, this person doesn't understand, and, you know, surely they mean better. And of course, they could do better if they were informed. I'm sure that everyone wants to do the right thing. And so it's very mar, it's very bitter up front to make peace with one another, especially two people that know one another really well and they haven't spoken to each other in a long time. And then at the end, after that bitterness, it becomes very sweet. It becomes sweet, just like the almond. So that's the challenge for us. We have two sides. We can either pursue the juicy gossip, which is very sweet but bitter at the end, or we can look at the almond and we can say it is difficult to make peace between two folks that otherwise don't speak to one another. At the end, we know that it will be very sweet. So in closing, I wish everyone bracha v'atzlacha this week and always to learn from the examples of what we should not be doing, of course, and to learn from the other examples of what we should be doing, and to wish everyone much success and happiness this coming week. This is Mordechai Plotzker, your host, and thanks again for joining us tonight. And God willing, tomorrow night we'll have another shiur on shiurenjoyment.com. Have a great week.